Rickov. Take a look. Let him take a look and see. Okay. All right. I'm going to begin with a story, an event in the life of my wife and myself that became the subject about 15, 20 years ago of a Purim shiur. And I am going to repeat the story, embellish it a little bit more, make it a little more. No, I think I made it very exciting in the past too. But it was a beautiful story from which we learned something very important. And I just felt the need to repeat it finally after all these years. In addition to the fact that it was something that happened right around Purim, and in a sense, it was sort of what I consider, as you will see, divine salvation. So this is my mini, mini Purimal. So it's an Indian to celebrate it year by year, but I don't think I've done it for 10, 15 years at least. It's number one on your sheet. It just says over there, the flat tire. So let me tell you the story of the flat tire. Just over here, on the left-hand side of the page, number one, the flat tire. There's nothing more. You don't even have to read it.
Oh, I get the flat tire, okay.
It doesn't say the flat tire, it says the flat tire.
Just the
flat tire. Yes? Well, it's there. Trust me, it's there. Hi, can I tell the story now?
Yes, please.
It must have been... I think it was 1995, that's about 18 years ago, I'm not good at math. Anyway, my wife and I went to the United States. I was invited to a convention of Young Israel rabbis. There was a period of a number of years that I was the guest speaker from Eretz Yisrael and gave a report on the situation. It was the years following Oslo, and I sort of represented the healthy right wing, the people who really knew the truth. And of course, now after all these years, we know that everything that we said was absolutely correct, and that we were being maligned. Oh, were we being maligned? I was maligned in one of the important books that was written at the time, but all right, that's going to be a story for another occasion. Anyway, here it is. We arrive in the Newark Airport, and I had rented a car, you know, a medium-sized car, a small-sized car. I can't afford a geyser tank of a car. So we rented a car, we come to the airport, we've arrived in the States. It's not an easy, as one grows older, it becomes more difficult, even though then, you know, I was still a very, very young man. Okay. Anyway, we come to the car rental and they say, Mr. Gold, you've been upgraded. Upgraded. They show me a car. Shidruguoti. And instead of a small car, something like a Lincoln, a Zashina car, I tell you. And especially, I was driving, I don't know what I was driving in those days, I was driving a Hyundai or something else, and here I get into this car, this is Olam Haba, this is Taiva, this is luxury. And we get into the car, and we start driving, and you know, you just put your foot a little bit on the gears, and the thing surges ahead with power. And I tell my wife, Bela, this is a car. This is driving. This is luxury. I couldn't get over it. I just plain couldn't get over it. And you know, we're about 5-10 miles up the turnpike. I hear a funny noise. And the funny noise gets a little funnier. It gets that funny that it's not funny anymore. And I say, we got a puncher. We got a flat tire. And I pull off to the closest side of the road. It was near an exit. It was the middle of February. It was very, very cold. Very cold. It's 8 o'clock at night. There isn't a gas station anywhere to be seen. It's dark. There's one street lamp. And here we are, a flat. And of course, I don't know how to change a flat tire. So what am I supposed to do? So of course, the most natural thing to do is precisely what I did. I started feeling very, very bad for myself, for ourselves, poor us. Who knows, we may be stuck here for years and nobody will ever see us. We'll never get out of here. Maybe I can let you in on there was a certain, I had a plan. My plan for that night is I was staying in Borough Park. So I have to tell you the truth, what I really planned. And now after all these years, I can say the truth. In those years already, there was only one thing left in the States that I felt I couldn't get here. They already had chicken of the sea, tuna. They already had Hellman's mayonnaise. All the big tigers of America were already here. There was only one thing they didn't have. And when I went to the States, that's what I had to do. And that was to go to Borough Park, 46th Street and 13th Avenue, to Kosher Delight for the juiciest steak you can imagine. That was my type. That was my consuming need. I don't need it anymore. We're living in the age of Papagaya. Oh, you in Talpiot, you're kidding me. Better than anything I ever got in Kosher Delight. Everything is here in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael, as the Gemara says, lo chasera klum. There's nothing that's missing in Eretz Yisrael. We have everything. So here it is. Not only is it freezing cold, I don't know how to change the tire. I may not get the steak that night. So I'm feeling very, very bad. I'm pitying myself. And we sit there, and I already have a number of prayers heavenward, see the terrible situation in which your son, Avrom Sholem ben Yehuda, the Chavabela, and the minutes are clicking away and nothing is happening. And then I make a decision. I'm going to change the tire. I don't know how to change the tire. Bela, open up the glove compartment. We get out they had the instructions over there, and it's very dark, and I go to that street lamp, and we start looking for how to change a tire, and then I have to tell you the thought that came to my mind. This is funny. When I came to Yeshivas Ner Yisrael in Baltimore, that was 1953, I believe. And it's true, whenever you come to a yeshiva, there'll always be somebody or a few people who are going to tell you the great stories about the godless of the yeshiva. There are always a few stories about, and you know, and each generation passes it on to the next. So I remember when I came to Ner Yisrael, they told me about Rabbi Yaakov Yitzchak Halevi Ruderman, Zevitzchadok Vavrach of the yeshiva on Ner Yisrael, that he learned in Slobodka. I mean, there was a generation of Rashi Yeshiva, the Rashi Yeshiva of the 40s, the 50s, and the 60s were all the people, the Gedolei Olam, that were educated by the Alter from Slobodka, the original Chavnosen Tzvi Finkel in Slobodka. Rabbi Yanky Kamenetsky learned a whole series of Rosh Yeshiva. Today already we have Rosh Yeshiva that are homegrown, mamish, grown in Eretz Yisrael, grown in America. But then he had learned in Slobodka. And it seems that about 1918, one copy of the Or Sameach, that's Rav Meir Simcha Koyim Dvinsk's classic work on the Rambam, one copy arrived in Slobodka. Everybody wanted it. So there was a list made up. Everybody got it for a few hours, then it goes on to the next one. All right. Anyway, it turned out that the Chashiva, young student at the time, he got it overnight. And the great story, the legend for all time is that he stood under a lamppost in Slobodka and learned the Or Sameach from beginning to end and committed it to memory. Then I think to myself, take a look at how the generations are falling. His Talmud is standing under a lamp near the New Jersey Turnpike trying to learn how to change a tire, and he doesn't understand how. By the way, I'm afraid to say, just one of the comic moments, my wife and I spent 9-10 days on a trip that I think we should have done years ago to Lithuania and Poland this summer in July. And we started off in Vilna, and from Vilna we spent a good number of hours in Slobodka. I couldn't help it, I told my wife, let's look for the street lamp. Where did the Rashiva learn the Or Sameach? But by the way, the trip was heart-wrenching. And I think it's a mitzvah. Slobodka was created Torah by Klal Yisrael. Nothing, all gone. It's unbelievable. But that's the story of all of Europe. From there we went to Poland. Don't ask. And we had a very difficult time coming back. And you know, the Rishon always, this is an aside, the Rishon always, you know, you go through Tzavos, it took us 48 hours to get back from Vienna to Eretz Yisrael. Don't ask, it was a terrible, terrible, we missed planes, it wasn't our fault, and we spent the whole night sitting up in an airport, I told you that. We didn't know how we were going to get back for Shabbos, and more than anything else, we wanted to get back there to Seoul for Shabbos. And it was Nissan v'Niflos at 12 o'clock Friday afternoon in the airport in Vienna. An employee of El Al handed us two boarding passes for probably the last two seats on a flight that would bring us back to Eretz Yisrael for Shabbos. You can't imagine how happy we were. And we got even happier. First of all, I was so happy, I was thinking about it. Do you understand how many millions of Jews, what they would have done to get two boarding passes for a flight to Eretz Yisrael? And by us, it was just a matter of getting home for Shabbos. But El Al, Zohar El Al Atov, we come onto the plane and we start walking, and you know, I'm halfway middle of the plane and I can't find a seat, So we start backtracking. They put us in business class. But no, that's not the end of the story. The end of the story came this week. It was a big problem by Verschlugene Airline, Austrian Airlines. Now this has nothing to do with the flat tire, but you know, it's before Purim, so. We had a terrible time. So in the last week, there were two deposits in my account from Austrian Airlines. And by the way, on my printout from the bank, it says Lufthansa Deutsche Airlines. Nazi money, you understand? they compensated us to the tune of a very nice few thousand shekel. And we had a family party last night, and Lufthansa Deutsche Airlines paid for the whole party. So it may have been worthwhile, that terrible night that we spent 48 hours really in Vienna. All right, but wait, how did we get here? Really?
Flat tire, yeah.
I'm at the flat tire. We're on the
lamppost.
We are, I'm looking under the, I'm reading under the lamppost, and the only thing I'm able to figure out at this point is you can't do anything until you get the jack out. Okay? So I go to the truck, I start looking for the jack, I find the jack, but it seems it's put in such a way you need some kind of a wrist action to get it out, and I... Until I got it out, and my hands are freezing, I'm numb, and I finally I get it under the. I take out the jack, I put it under the car, and I begin to jack up the car. The moment I do that, big truck comes screeching to a halt, and a very big, heavy man, and I don't want to say any bad words, he was an Afro-American, and I'm ready to say Shema Yisrael. This was the gentlest person in the world, and he says, "Mister, you got a problem? Man, I'm going to help you. I see you got a flat tire. I'm going to change the tire." Wow. I mean, this is Eliyahu HaNavi. This is not Stamen, an Afro-American. 10 seconds later, a fire engine red car comes screeching to a halt. And out of this fire engine red car comes an extremely blonde fellow who says he's an off-duty policeman. He was driving on the other side, and he saw our problem here. He went to the next exit, turn around, and here it is. I have the Afro-American, and I have this blonde, good-looking, off-duty policeman. These two fellows are going to change my flat tire. And meanwhile, the policeman, his wife is in the car. They take Bela into the car so she should be warm, and the two fellows change the tire, and somewhere in the middle there, I don't remember at what point, my wife says to me, "I know you. You're going to make a drusha out of this day." So I told her, no, you're making a mistake. I got it already. Freezing, but I'm thinking. Anyway, the end of the story, I would say, is open to a machlekes between my wife and myself. Big Afro-American. I gave him a $50 bill. He refused to take it, and I wouldn't let him go. I in his hand, he got into his truck, and here, of course, there are two versions of what happened. I saw him drive away, and I saw the truck disappear and ascend heavenward. And my wife still insists, no, it was a real Afro-American, it was a real truck. All right, okay, what can I do? End of story. No, not really. We finally made our way back to Borough Park, and I said, it's too late, it's 10:30 already, no steak tonight. I said, let's drive by anyway. We come to Kosher Delight. It's 10:45. It's open. I go dashing in. "Can I have a steak?" "Yes, sit down, mister. Take it easy." And everybody lived happily ever after. What was the drosha? What was going through my head? It was only a guess. It was an off-chance guess. As soon as I got to where we're staying, I get a hold of a Tanakh, a Megillus Esther. You can't believe the joy when this thought that occurred to me on the highway works out. There are 167 psukim in Megillat Esther, which means there are 83 psukim on one side, 83 psukim on the other side, and there's pasuk 84 smack in the middle. The epicenter of the Megillah is pasuk 84. What does pasuk 84 say? You know what pasuk 84 says? We'll read it soon. I'll tell you what pasuk 84 says. You know what? Let's take a look at number 2. You're going to see the significance of pasuk 84. And we're of the few people in the world that know it. By Thursday, when it's on the two websites already, the rest of the world is going to know. But you're going to know now. Very important. What had happened, this is the beginning of chapter 5 of the Megillah. The end, during the course of chapter 4, Mordechai comes and tells us, you should know that there's a gzeirah, a decree to destroy all Jews. Go to Achashverosh. Go plead with him. Go to him. Stop it. You have to do something. And then he tells her, if you're going to remain silent now, God is going to find another way to save the Jewish people. He's going to save them. So then she says to him, now listen to me, Mordechai. Gather together all of Israel, and I want you to fast Tsumu Alai. And we're going to get back to that pasuk later. Fast for me 3 days. I and my girls will also fast. And after 3 days of prayer and fasting, I will come to the king. Because she has told him that anybody who comes to the king without having been invited is cut down immediately. Levad will be killed. Levad. Except for the one to whom the king extends his golden scepter. And I haven't been called to come to the king now for 30 days. Now, of course, if you think there's something wrong with Achashverosh, there's nothing wrong with Achashverosh. Achashverosh established this form of protection for himself. Remember, there was an attempt on his life earlier in the Megillah. Bigson Vaseresh wanted to assassinate him. And therefore, from that moment on and further, Ahasuerus, for all intents and purposes, is living in a bunker. This is expanded on the whole psychology of Ahasuerus. Soloveitchik has a shir on it. It says, he goes into a bunker mentality. Nobody can come into that king. He is surrounded on all sides. He doesn't know who else may be lurking out there who wants to do him in. Anyway, Vayehi Bayom HaShlishi, right here, number 2, on the third day, this is the beginning of chapter 5, on the third day, Vatubash Esther Malchus, Esther clothed herself in regal clothing, Vatamol Bachatzar Beit HaMelech HaPnimit, and she stood there at the entrance to the throne room, Nochach Beit HaMelech, facing the room of the king, Vahamelech Yosheva Kisei Machuto, the Beit HaMelech, the king is sitting on his throne. Nochach Petach HaBayit. That's also significant. He has his back to the wall, but he can see all the movement coming into his room, because he also wants to be on guard in case somebody is going to make their way into his room. He's a frightened, terrified individual. And he sees her there. Do you know what it means when he sees her there? Something is terribly wrong. He knows that Esther is, this second, she's putting her life on the line. She may be cut down immediately to shreds. And he saw her. ויהי כראות המלך את אסתר, אמר לו, the king saw Queen Esther, עומדת בחצר, standing there in the courtyard, נושא חן בעיניו, ויושת, he stretches out the golden scepter to her. And Esther came close, and of course, then he asks her, and you can even hear the way he asks it, she touches the top of the scepter, ויאמר המלך, and the king said to her, interesting, he doesn't say, good morning, Esther. How are you feeling? Esther, you're looking so lovely today. No. Imagine the sense of deep concern or desperation. Maloch, Esther, Amalka. What's wrong? She just put her life on the line. I don't see something that's seriously wrong. Maloch, Esther, Amalka. What is it you seek? Until half of the kingdom, and it'll be yours. We already talked about that last week. Until half of the kingdom, he's telling her, even at this moment of his great surprise, he tells her, don't ask me about Yerushalayim. Right? Yerushalayim is not part of the agenda. There will be no construction in Yerushalayim. Finish. Oops. That's it. That was the gezeira, and he is behind it all the way. Little does he know, you know, that Rishon takes care of his people. The king who follows him is going to be his son from Esther, Dargavish, and Darius II. And Dargavish is the one who's going to permit construction to begin again in Yerushalayim. So all of his basic zedas, no construction in Yerushalayim. You know what? Ahasuerus is another one of the characters that I'd love to take by the hand through Yerushalayim and show him what Yerushalayim looks like. And then I'm also going to ask him, pray tell me, where is Shushan? Where's Shushan? A few shards are left of Shushan. All right. Okay, wait. But Esther, if it's good to the king, let the king and Haman come today to the party. I said, oh, Siti Lovarak, I already have a party prepared. I want you and Haman to come to the party. The king said, because the king is extremely anxious, and that really doesn't really describe what's going on in Ahasuerus' mind. What does this woman want? Why did she endanger her life? She could be dead now. Maharilat Haman, hurry Haman, la sota dvar Esther, to do that which Esther. And the king and Haman, we need background music for a shir on Megillat Esther. Esther, they both came to the party that Esther made. The king can't wait for this moment. Of course, once they come, you know, he has to wait until they serve, and then he's plotting. Ahasuerus is plotting. There's no question about it. What is it that you ask and it shall be given to you? And what do you seek? Until half of the kingdom, and it will be done. The next pasuk is pasuk 24 in the Megillah. 84 in the Megillah. I counted it 100 times. Vatomet Esther. This is the swing pasuk. There are 83 psukim before. There are going to be 83 psukim after. This is the pivotal pasuk in the middle of the Megillah. Vatan Esther Vatomet. And Esther answered and said, She'elati u'bakashati. You know what happens at this moment? I'll describe to you what happens at this moment. You will understand it maybe better than most other people. In this pasuk, you know what Esther's doing? She's taken the jack out of the car. She's put the jack under the car. And she begins the process of raising that car. She has taken the first step for Klal Yisrael. to do what they have to do, to the extent that they're capable of acting on their own behalf. I can tell you exactly what's happening in heaven, because I know exactly what happened in heaven while we were out on the highway. Malochim, Srofim, Chayos, Ophanei HaKodesh came to the Rosh Hashanah of Benishon. Gold. The golds are stuck on the highway. It's freezing cold. He has to get to Borough Park for a steak. You're not going to help him. You're not going to do anything for him. And there's no response. The Rebbeinu is sitting there, poker face. No response. And then, in the middle of this whole tumult going on in heaven, a malach comes flying over and he says, Rebbeinu Shalom, he took the handbook out of the glove compartment. No response in heaven. He's reading it together with Bela under the lamp, shades of his great Rebbe. There's no response. Rebbeinu Shalom, he took out the jack. Then you can feel already that the heavenly forces are beginning to get very interested in what's going to happen. And then a malach comes and says, Rebbeinu Shalom, the jack is under the car, and it's going up. And the Rebbeinu Shalom responds, send the afro and send the off-duty policeman now. The yisod of the Megillah is, as in everything else, the Rebbeinu Shalom waits for what we do. When we act, then the Rebbeinu Shalom is going to be there with us. If we're going to say Tillim because we feel self-pity, meaningless, it's useless. The Megillah changes from a story of despair to a story of hope the moment Esther says, She'elati u'bakashati. Because you know what she's saying? She's saying, I'm going to ask you, King, I'm going to ask you. But this is not just a question, it's a bakasha. You know what a bakasha means? I'm going to go out after this with all of the power that I have. Bakesh shalom v'rafehu. Seek peace and pursue it. Achat sha'alti me'et Hashem otar bakesh. Sha'alti and bakesh. Something that I asked of God, but not that I asked. It's bakasha. This is going to become my life's work. Shifti b'beit Hashem, that I should remain in the house of God. Kol yimei chayav. That's what David is all about. So she'ela is one thing, but when you take she'ela to bakasha, oh boy, you're moving ahead. She is sending a message. I don't know whether Ahasuerus got the message yet, but in heaven they certainly got. By the way, they're already preparing. Everything is being prepared. The next few hours are going to be crucial. Finally, he's going to ask her, so what is it that you want? And the only thing she comes up with is, I have another party tomorrow for you and Haman. Come to the party tomorrow. You can't imagine. Ahasuerus most probably is plotting. There's no better word. He's plotting. He wants to know what she wants. There must be something important. She's put her life out on the line. And he has to wait now till tomorrow. There are two great kings who are up all night that night. It's not in the airport in Vienna, but one of them is up in heaven and one of them is down on earth. Ahasuerus is not going to sleep that night. He's not going to sleep that night. God and the heavenly bug, the heavenly forces are not sleeping. They are in the process of preparing the salvation of the Jewish people. Let's go one step further. Turn over. Let's go to number four. And from number four, we're going to go back to number three. You'll see everything's... What I have in number four is from an awesome sefer, the very first chapter of a sefer called Bet Elokim, the House of God. who was written by the Maharit, Rabbi Yosef Mitrani. He was a member of the Bed Din of Rabbi Yosef Karo in Tzfat in the 15th, 16th century. We're talking about a giant. And he wrote a sefer called Bet Elokim. The first 20 chapters are about prayer. And the very first paragraph, Roi Lated Geda, Le'inyan Atfila, it's proper that we should define what prayer is. There are many great things that depend on this definition of prayer. If we want to grasp an understanding of the meaning of prayer, K'moshe Nevaer, as we will explain, Be'ezat Hashem, U'matzanu Gidra Nachon V'Shalom, we have found its definition correct and complete for who? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 words. The 7 words are Bakashat Ha'adam Mehakel. Did you hear the first word over there? Is that first word familiar? Bakashat Ha'adam Mehakel. Man who asks of God, Davar Tzorech, something that he needs, She'eino Birishuto. It's not within the realm of his possibility to accomplish it. You hear that? He's going to spend the rest of the chapter explaining each word. But I'm only interested in those last 2 words, asking of God something that's not within one's ability to do. And there we have it. Umilot she'eino b'rishuto, those 2 words, eino b'rishuto, it's not within the realm of this possibility, yoru gamkein. That also shows al she'ein roi la'odam litpalel lakel, it's not correct for a person to pray to God, afil al dovar hechrechi, even if something that's absolute necessity to my life. You can't pray for it in yeshecholet b'yado u'b'rishuto la'hashlim ha'davarahu. If you have the ability, the opportunity, and the possibility to take care of it yourself. Don't pray to Rabbi Shem HaKav. You need money? Go out and get a job. You can't just sit around at home and say, I need Parnassa. Rabbi Shem, give me Parnassa. No, sir. Can't do that. Ke'afilu, Shein lo pat besalo, even a person doesn't have bread in his basket. Ela kebe suda achas. He has enough for one meal. The Omer, he says, what am I going to eat tomorrow? Means he doesn't have much faith. You don't turn to God under those circumstances. Certainly to go ahead and pray to God, that God should feed him when he has the possibility. You have already in your you have Parker Salo. You have over there place a few thousand shares of IBM that you don't want to touch, you understand? So what? Okay? And your call is Takeru Tsrorakum, person can go out and earn a living. Go ahead and make money. Ukumashakosa Dabra Allah as David said, Havalanu Ezrat Mitzar Vishav Chuatadam. Bring us salvation from the ones who oppress us. And man's salvation is nothing. When do we turn to God? Ezrat Mitzar. You hear what he says? Hold on, God, bring us salvation from the one who oppresses us. And the second half of the pasuk, David HaMelech says, because man's salvation is meaningless. In other words, there is nobody who can help me. I can't help myself, and there's nobody who can help me. That's when I turn to God, that he should save me. Kloma, it means kishein on yicholu lo shiatz meinu, when we can't save ourselves, bedera hateva, in the normal course of events. Uchu atenu hishav, and anything that we may do for ourselves is really in vain, and it's valueless, it doesn't mean anything. Oz havolanu ezras mitzav, then God, I want you to bring us assistance from the hand of the oppressor. When we are able to save ourselves in the normal course of events, Then we have no right to ask God that he should do miracles for us, the shi'azol lanu mitzar, and to save us from the hand of an oppressor. If you can do it yourself, go ahead and do it yourself. Which means the following. There's a mistake that people make. They think, you know, what are you talking about? The salvation of the Jewish people is not from Tzvah Hagana Yisrael. My tilim, my tefillah, that's what does it. Don't tell me it's those soldiers. It's a terrible mistake. If there would be no soldiers, I couldn't pray altogether. My prayer is meaningless. If you haven't done what you can and should do, b'derech hateva, you don't have the right to turn to God. The Rebbeim will say, hey, speak unto the children of Israel and tell them, can't Bista to go make an army? Esther was doing what was in her power. She had no power to do anything beyond begging, seeking. Then therefore, in heaven, they're moving ahead. She's done exactly what she has to do. She has the jack under the car. Now we can come to the aid and assistance of Esther and Clarice. Up until that point, no. If there'd be no army, you know what would happen if there would be no army? Stell sich nach vor, what would have happened to this country without an army? We wouldn't be here, we'd all be off. But once we have done what a people has to do, the derech hateva, then there are nisim v'niflos. Then we pray, and the Rebbe Hashem sends miracles through that awesome force. I said it in the past, and I spoke at a Sheva Bracha someplace this week, and we may talk a little bit more about that. And I said, it fit in. And even if it doesn't fit in, I make sure it fits in. And I said, take a look. This was in Har Nof. And I emerged unscathed. And I said, take a look. You have to think about it. And I tell you the truth, I think about it every day. 68 years ago, Jews were begging the Allies to bomb the rail lines to Auschwitz. Fast forward 68 years later, a whole world is waiting and watching. What is Israel going to do? Not only are they waiting, they're watching, they most probably are hoping and praying that Israel smashes the nuclear complexes in Iran. You have to sit and think about it. I don't believe in all of history was there ever such a movement from the very depths of despair and destruction to awesome power. It's unbelievable. There's no question about it that this is the Rebbeinu Shlom. He's working overtime. He's staying up long nights. And Lufthansa is not going to pay him for staying up nights. He's staying up nights to take care of his Columbus Club. That's what he's doing. It's exhilarating. It's lo yu'uman. And I say, anybody who's incapable of seeing this, appreciating it, and internalizing it, is missing the awesomeness of every day that passes. Understand? When I take a look at the pictures of Netanyahu and Obama, so you know, Obama, president of the most powerful, certainly the most powerful country on the state of the earth. Netanyahu, most probably prime minister of the smallest country on the face of this earth. And this guy, Obama, is walking on eggs, you understand. He's afraid of making the wrong step or saying the wrong thing. And most probably in his moments of lucidity, he hopes, Netanyahu, Seinish Kanar, I'm an Afro-American, you know what you should do? Go change the tire yourself. Go ahead and do a job on it. It's unbelievable. I don't think anybody can give me any other country in history that went through a process from 68 years ago to today. And by the way, it's not only today. It's been this way already for about 50 years. 50 years? No, 63 years. 63 years. Hudu Hashem Ki Tov. It's unbelievable. That's the yesod of the Megillah. I want to prove to you, Lefi Amiyut Dati, I want to prove to you that whatever I'm saying is true. Now, that doesn't include the Afro-American, whether he was Eliyahu or not. if you're on my right side, that's also okay. You know, I can handle that. But no, I'll show you something. And I searched the Mefarshim and I haven't found. Number three. Vayagidu L'Mordechai et Divrei Esther. This is the chapter four. Chapter four in the Megillah. They told Mordechai the words of Esther. Okay? Esther had told him, listen, you know, anybody who goes to, you want me to go running to the king now and beg and plead and importune and fall before him and beg for my people? I can't do that. Anybody who goes to the king not having been invited is just going to be cut down and killed. They told Mordechai the words of Esther. Vayomer Mordechai l'Hashiv el Esther. Famous psukim. Mordechai said to reply to Esther, El tadami b'nafsheich l'himalei Beit HaMelech. Don't for a moment think that you are going to be rescued because you're going to live because you're in the house of the king. Mikol HaYehudim, that you will be rescued from all the Jews. Ki v'chareish tachareish. If you're going to remain silent at this moment, relief and deliverance will come to the Jews from another place. When you and your father's house will be lost. When we are there, how do we know? Well, the next year at this time, you're going to be queen. What do you think? You think you're in such a strong position, you're vulnerable like we all are. The Rav always used to say that the story of the Megillah is the story of the vulnerability of man. It's like throwing lots. You don't know what's going to happen from one minute to the next. About Tamar Esther Lahashiv al Mordechai, Esther said to respond to Mordechai. According to the Rav, here is first turning point in the Megillah. This first turning point is the turning point where Esther takes charge. The Yeshua is going to come through a woman. Mordechai is, you know, the tough man. Go running into him. Prostrate yourself on the ground. No. The wiser, calmer, bina yaseira that a woman has, the extra ability to think profoundly that a woman has. Leif Kinosis Kolayudin, go gather all of the Jews together, Hanin Tzimbishushan, that are found in Shushan, the Tzun Walai, and fast for me, Thou Tokhu, Thou Tishnu, don't eat and don't drink, Shoshes Yomim, 3 days, Lailu Yom, day and night, Gamani Benar, O Tayotzun King, I and my girls will also fast, Ubechain, and in this state, of 3 days of fast, of all, Amalek, I'm going to come to the king. I shall lo kedat, even though it's against the law, and I can be killed. The chasher ovadati, ovadati. If I'm going to be lost, I will be lost. Vayavar Mordechai. And mamish, what happens over here, Mordechai now, is the faithful servant of Esther. He's not giving orders anymore. He's not giving instructions. He knows exactly what his place is. From this moment on further, everything is going to be in the hands of Esther. Vayavar Mordechai, vayas kichol asher tziv ta'ol of Esther. We'll save the Vayavar Mordechai, I don't know if I'll have time, but right? Vayomer Mordechai really means he crossed over a body of water. He really went from Shushan HaBira to Shushan. These were two separate parts of the city. Shushan HaBira was the seat of government, Kiryat HaMemshala, and there was a moat between Shushan HaBira and Shushan. Vayavor, Rashi brings it from the Gemara, he crossed over Arkuma Demaya, a body of water. By the way, this is one of the proofs that the Megillah is so precise. The Megillah was written in a way that sends hints that this really happened, and they know exactly what Shushan looked like and where Shushan HaBira was. Vayavor Mordechai, vayas, and he did Gekol Asher Tzivta Olam Veser, everything that Esther commanded him. Mordechai now is taking position number two. He's the one who's going to carry out the words of Esther. There's one word that bothered me here. Esther says, gather all the Jews, v'tzumu olai, fast for me. Fast for me? What do you mean fast for me? Why not fast for the Jewish people? We're in great danger. No. You know what Esther is saying? Right now, the one who's in immediate danger is me. You pray for me. Do you know at what moment you're going to be able to pray for the Jewish people? From the moment that I begin to stand before Achashverosh in Pasuk 84, when I'm going to put the jack under the car, then you can start praying for the Jewish people. But at this moment, you haven't done a thing yet. The first act that you're going to do, what the Beit HaMikdash would say, the first act that they're going to do on their own behalf, what's Birshutcha, what you can do, is going to be when she stands there before Haman and Achashverosh and says, She'ilatiu bakashati. But until that point, you know what? You just pray for me that I should be able to get in there and begin the process of working on behalf of the Jewish people. The moment that I begin that process, you can start calling all sorts of tefillah gatherings, you understand? All sorts of tefillah gatherings. And I don't know, but one thing I know for sure, they didn't do what we have now in Brooklyn. There's a replica of the Kotel in Brooklyn. Who needs it? It's small anymore. There was a picture of it in the paper in the Jerusalem Post yesterday or the day before. A replica of the, I hope it has a hole over there so you can stick in a... It has a hole? Yeah, okay.
More than one.
The moment, so you understand, I am saying that the word Olai, the Tzumu Olai, is proof to everything I've said. She asks fast for me so that I should be able to get to the king and begin the process of working on behalf of the Jewish people. The moment she does that, oh boy, then we can begin to pray, because you know what we have fulfilled at that point? The moment she gets there, we have fulfilled the last two words of the definition of tefillah. Bakashat ha'adam me'akel davar tzorech she'eino birishuto. As long as she has not gone to begin that process, we haven't done anything yet. When she begins that process, then we can do the rest. I have 4 minutes left. In these 4 minutes, this is a repeat of something that I said last year or 2 years ago, and I'm only repeating it because it will be a quick review of the halachas of Purim. All right? We have a little extra time. Tomorrow is already the Fast of Esther. Tomorrow night, while the rest of the world, all hungry, are going to go to the Megillah reading, and they're going to get aggravated every time the little kids bang by Haman. Don't they know we're hungry, we want to go home? And I lived through that for enough years in my life, and I came here, so to thank God, Wednesday night, No, Thursday. Wednesday night. Wednesday night, while everybody's going hungry to the reading of the Megillah, we're going to just walk around in Yerushalayim, you know, especially the weather's gotten a little warmer, it's Machaya. We can just take it easy during that whole Thursday, one of the great days of the year. Ah, the Yud Dalet, Yud Dalet. They're running around with Shalach Manas, and they're running around with Tons, and they're making a Sudaspur. And we're going to have it a bit, we're going to have it a little easier, because you have to cut down on Shalach Manas this year. You have no time. Friday, you have to start the Suda sometime before Chatzos, by 11:30, a quarter to 12. No sticking around. There's no time to waste time. So I said a few years ago the following. You'll see number... It says on the... on the left-hand side, review. There are four letters there, Amalek, and I once said that in the letters of the name Amalek, we have all the halachas of Purim. All that is necessary to wage war with Amalek is in those four letters, Ayin, Mem, Lamed, Kuf. Ayin stands for Al-Hanisim. You have to supposed to say Al-Hanisim. Supposed to say Al-Hanisim. By the way, that I say is the most important. This is when I spoke at the Sheva Brachas in Haranov. I said, Al Hanisim means we have to thank God for everything He does for us, but we have to be aware of what He's doing before we can thank Him. If you don't make that comparison between 68 years ago and today, you don't have a clue what He's doing for you. You have to be able to see that before your very eyes. A whole world tensely waiting what to see. If I'd have a word with Netanyahu, he's not here now. Well, I talked to him. Yeah. He's on his way back today, tomorrow from America. I tell him Purim is the best day. Yeah. That's the day to destroy the new Shushan. Okay, Ahmadinejad, you're not sure if this is right. His days are numbered. He don't know it, but his days are numbered. Men. Look what mem is. Mishloach manot, sending gifts. Matanot le'evyonim, gifts to the poor. Michiat Amalek, fulfilling the mitzvah of destroying Amalek. Mikra Megillah, reading the Megillah. How do you like that for one mem all over there? Lamed. Lechol, to eat. Lishtot, to drink. Libsume bepuria, to be happy on Purim. That lamed, that's the mitzvah of the Suda. There are four mitzvahs of the day. The four mitzvahs of the day are the reading of the Megillah, Mishloach Manos, Matanos Avyonin, and Sudas Purim. Then you come to Kuf. Kuf is Kriyat HaTorah. There is our law of reading the Torah. By the way, you can still hear, I also Kriyat HaMegillah. If you have a Kuf, you might as well use the kuf as far as you can. And then more than anything else, the last two words are kimu v'kiblu. And the Megillah says, kimu v'kiblu ayehudim aleim balzaram. Jewish people accepted upon themselves and upon all their children to keep forever these two days of Purim. And the famous Gemara that says, kimu, they approved Mashekiblu kvar, what they had already received. They had received Torah at Har Sinai, but now they again reaffirmed that Kabbalah's HaTorah. That's the mitzvah Purim. He also moved in the Shabbat that we should all be safe to have Atar Purim Sameach, and the Rebbeinu should bring Yeshua to the Chumash. We should be around to watch it happen. We're in for a grand show, everybody. Thanks a lot.